Freya, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Corruption and bribery scandal uncovered rocks the football world. U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch Wednesday said lies, corruption, and bribery have plagued football's governing body, FIFA, for two decades. Federal charges have been unveiled against 14 people. She described the allegations as rampant, systemic, and deep-rooted.
Beginning in 1991, two generations of soccer officials, including the then presidents of two regional soccer confederations under FIFA, one being the Confederation of North Central American and Caribbean Association Football, known as CONCACAF, which includes the U.S., and the South American Football Confederation, or CONMEBOL, which represents organized soccer in South America, used their positions of trust within their respective organizations to solicit bribes from sports marketers in exchange for the commercial rights to their soccer tournaments.
She said the scandal extended to the 2011 FIFA presidential election and to agreements regarding sponsorship of the Brazilian national football team by a major U.S. sportswear company. Swiss authorities have arrested several FIFA officials. U.S. authorities have carried out more search warrants. Several people have already pleaded guilty. In Burundi, demonstrators were back on the streets Wednesday demanding President Pierre Nkurunziza withdraw from seeking a third term in next month's election. His effort to extend his rule has sparked almost daily street protests, in which at least 20 have been killed in the past month. In New York, the president of the UN Security Council said after an emergency meeting, the predominant opinion of members is that Burundi's election should be postponed. Meanwhile, the Burundian opposition says it's impossible to hold free and fair parliamentary elections scheduled next week. This is VOA News. The United States says there is no thought of extending nuclear talks with Iran beyond the June 30th self-imposed deadline for a final agreement. U.S. spokesman Jeff Rathke says the five negotiating partners, the U.S., Britain, China, France, Germany, and Russia, are united that a deal must be reached by the end of next month.
We're not contemplating an extension beyond June 30th. Again, we're united among the P5 plus one that our efforts are to reach a final deal by the end of June.
But state-run Iranian media quoted the chief Iranian negotiator, Abbas Araghchi, as saying the talks could go beyond the deadline. Iran's supreme leader, who has the final word on any agreement, has ruled out international inspections of Iranian military sites. That prompted French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius Sunday to say France would not sign any deal that excludes the inspections that he says would verify if Iran's keeping his promises. Secretary of State John Kerry heads to Nigeria for Friday's inauguration of President-elect Muhammadu Buhari. Residents of the northern city Kaduna have high hopes for their new leader. Al-Hassan Uba is a local businessman.
It will be a celebrated day. It's a highly celebrated day because even within my locality, they are planning to buy a big cow to slaughter it, for everybody to inaugurate it, and everybody will sit together to view the inauguration. Since we cannot be able to go anywhere, we'll remain at home in Kaduna to view everything, and we'll pray for them for a smooth inauguration period.
30 years after seizing power in a military coup, the former general became the first Nigerian to oust an incumbent through the ballot box. The United States says it will stand by Ukraine to fight Russian aggression, which has become a prominent consideration for European security. Speaking in Washington Wednesday, Vice President Joe Biden said that supporting Kiev is important for the future of the country, the future of European security, and the future of the international order.
So long as Ukraine leaders keep faith with the project of reform, the United States will continue to stand with them. In total, we have provided over $470 million in economic assistance since the start of the crisis. In addition, a $1 billion loan guarantee last year, another $1 billion loan guarantee signed this month, and potentially a further $1 billion at the end of this year if Ukraine continues on the path of reform.
Meanwhile, the Kremlin has refused comment on a Western journalist's eyewitness account of a huge Russian military buildup near Ukraine's border. An Egyptian policeman was killed by a roadside bomb in the northwest Sinai Wednesday near a police station in El Arish. The region has seen a spike in attacks on security officials since the military overthrew Islamist President Mohamed Morsi in 2013. And according to partial results released Wednesday, Ethiopia's ruling party has won a sweeping victory in Sunday's parliamentary election, taking more than 440 seats in parliament. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. authorities arrested a number of FIFA officials for alleged involvement in a major corruption scandal.
These individuals, through these organizations, engaged in bribery to decide who would televise games, where the games would be held, and who would run the organization overseeing organized soccer worldwide.
That's U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch. Ethiopia's ruling party wins overall majority in Sunday's election. We'll tell you how Ebola survivors in Sierra Leone are helping their country get to zero Ebola cases. The ICC upholds its previous ruling to try former Ivory Coast First Lady Simone Gbagbo. And Nigeria's army launches an initiative to purge some soldiers.
Most of them were charged for offenses that borders on cowardice, aiding the enemy, as well as desertion in the face of enemy.
Colonel Sani Kukakesha Usman is Nigeria's military spokesman. An Angolan journalist goes to court today to hear a verdict in his criminal libel case. And the UN Security Council adopts a resolution to protect journalists in conflict zones. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Football fans around the world are still in shock over the corruption indictments of top FIFA and corporate officials, as well as marketing companies by the United States government. As VOA's Bernard Schussman reports from New York, there is promise of more to come.
The fallout from U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch's Wednesday news conference is reverberating in the sports world. Major advertisers like Budweiser and McDonald's are reevaluating sponsorship. Leading football journalist Mark Besson of World Football Insider told VOA in a Skype interview that while FIFA does not seem jolted, but the public is.
Yeah, football fans deserve to be ashamed about the state of FIFA, and they have every right, really, to want some resolution to this corruption scandal. After all, you know, since December 2010, when the World Cup was awarded to Qatar and Russia, it's been wave upon wave of scandal. And Sepp Blatter maintains his position at the top of FIFA when others beneath him are either corrupt or taken away from the game by the Ethics Committee.
Blatter, who has not been indicted, is expected to be re-elected Friday to a fifth term as head of FIFA. FIFA spokesperson Walter De Gregorio says the next two World Cup venues will not change, even though 10 of the FIFA members who voted in favor are being investigated.
The World Cup 2018 and 2022 will be played in Russia and in Qatar.
In New York, U.S. Attorney General Lynch told an Overflow news conference that the investigation into FIFA, its marketing associates, and the banks is far from over.
They were expected to uphold the rules that keep soccer honest and to protect the integrity of the game. Instead, they corrupted the business of worldwide soccer to serve their interests and to enrich themselves. They used the banking and the wire facilities of the U.S. to distribute their bribe payments, and they planned to profit from their scheme in large part through promotional efforts directed at the growing U.S. market for soccer.
So far, a total of 14 people have been arrested in Switzerland and the United States. Richard Weber, chief of the Internal Revenue Service investigation, had a special title for FIFA's activity, calling it the World Cup of Fraud. And Weber added, the case is not about soccer, it's about corruption. Bernard Schussman, VOA News, New York.
Nigeria's army says it will purge soldiers it deems unfit to carry out their constitutional mandate. Military spokesman Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usman says the army will enforce discipline and professionalism in its ranks as the fight against Boko Haram continues. In this interview with reporter Peter Clotty, Usman denied reports the army launched the initiative to purge certain segments of the population based on ethnic and religious sentiments.
As you are quite aware, there is an ongoing disciplinary process of officers and soldiers of the Nigerian army, especially as it relates to the fight against terrorism and insurgency in the country. Most of them were charged for offenses that borders on cowardice, aiding the enemy, as well as desertion in the face of enemy.
Some people are saying that this latest move is just political, just to weed away some people from certain parts of the country and leave other parts of the country intact. What is your response to such criticisms?
That is far from the truth. People are just being mischievous and sentimental. The military thrives on certain value system, one of which is discipline, courage, and bravery. As you are quite aware, we are involved in the fight against terrorism in the country. Most of the people that were accused, they abandoned their locations or exhibited cowardice, some kind of act of indiscipline that led to the, you know, capture of so many towns and municipalities in the country.
Well, there were suggestions that Boko Haram fighters were better equipped than the Nigerian military, and that is why some of these people have to run away from the fight because the government did not properly arm them. What is your take on that?
And honestly, again, this is far from the truth, simply because the purchase of arms is an open secret even in the international market. Throughout, there hasn't been any history where Boko Haram terrorists went and purchased large-scale arms or high-caliber arms and ammunition. It is such a shame and disgrace that most of the arms and ammunition, they either captured it from the Nigerian soldiers because they abandoned it, or they fabricated based on what they were able to scavenge when the soldiers ran away. So basically what I'm trying to tell you is that this Boko Haram terrorists are never in any point in time better equipped or better armed than the Nigerian army.
When will this purge end, and how thorough will this process be?
It is a thorough thing. Disciplinary process is a continuous thing.
Colonel Sani Kukasheka Usma is the spokesman for Nigeria's military. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. Appeals judges at the International Criminal Court have called on Ivory Coast government to hand over former First Lady Simon Gbagbo, maintaining an earlier ruling that she stand trial in The Hague. Lisa Bryan reports for VOA from Paris.
Reading out the International Criminal Court's ruling on Wednesday, Polish judge Piotr Hofmanski said Ivory Coast must stand by its obligation to surrender former First Lady Simone Gbagbo without delay.
La chambre préliminaire a analysé...
Judge Hofmanski said Ivorian authorities failed to offer proof that could counter the ICC's initial decision against holding Gbagbo's trial in Ivory Coast, noting that the information they supplied was vague. The appeals ruling also found Ivorian officials had not proven in a timely manner that they were investigating the former First Lady for the same allegations she faces in The Hague. The ICC only takes action when member countries cannot or will not prosecute a suspect. In March, an Ivorian court sentenced Gbagbo to 20 years in prison for her role in the violence that followed Ivory Coast's 2010 elections. Her husband, former President Laurent Gbagbo, refused to concede defeat despite losing to current Ivorian President Alassane Ouattara. More than 3,000 people died in the unrest. Once called the Iron Lady, Simone Gbagbo is accused of running death squads when her husband was in power. The couple was arrested in 2011, and Laurent Gbagbo was then sent to The Hague. His trial at the ICC is expected to start later this year. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 28th. Daybreak Africa time is 14:30 past the hour. Sierra Leone is working hard to get to zero cases of Ebola, and survivors are playing a key role, helping raise awareness about the disease by going out into communities every day to educate people. Nina DeVries has more from Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown.
Moa Wharf is an impoverished area of Freetown. Pigs sift through the garbage for food here, and people live in overcrowded homes. This community was recently a hotspot for the Ebola virus.
And they do fine, eh? Okay. Then Sulaiman.
That's why Ebola survivors like Sulaiman Watfa are key. Ebola survivors are immune to the disease and have been educating Moa Wharf residents about the deadly virus. At first, it wasn't easy, he says, in his native Creole dialect.
If I go to the council, someone they say, no, don't talk to me. I say, no. Now it's survival.
I went into quarantine homes, they would say, no, don't talk to me. But then I show them my Ebola survivor certificate and they realize I can help. And they listen to me, he says. Watfa lost almost his entire family to Ebola. He contracted it from his father. And although he survived, life hasn't been easy. He's faced a lot of stigma. No one will hire him when they hear he's an Ebola survivor. The work he's been doing, however, seems to make a difference. Moa Wharf has been Ebola-free now for more than 21 days. That number is significant because that is the virus's incubation time. UNICEF is one of the NGOs supporting the community of Moa Wharf through social mobilization, says Lucy Knight, a communication for development specialist with UNICEF.
We identified that survivors were going to be very important in this community. It's marginalized, it's a slum, it's on the coastline of Freetown, and the quarantine homes were hard to get to, and there wasn't room for the security people to be there all the time.
Fatmata Bangura's home was one of the three quarantined in an area of the community after a man died from Ebola there. Approximately 60 people live in the three homes.
They can talk to me, they can advise me.
Speaking in Creole, Bangura says she's grateful for the work of Ebola survivors. They come talk to us and we really appreciate it, she says. And while it's great news that the community is Ebola-free for now, people still need to be alert, says Knight. Three new Ebola cases were reported in Freetown Wednesday.
But we are seeing from the Moa Wharf cluster cases in other wards in Freetown. So linked to the cases in Moa Wharf, people have left, they've visited family members in other parts of Freetown, and then they have become symptomatic and they have caught Ebola. So
almost 4,000 people have died from the virus in Sierra Leone. Watfa says he will continue volunteering until Sierra Leone is Ebola-free. Nina DeVries for VOA News, Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Ethiopia's ruling party won Sunday's election with an overwhelming majority, according to preliminary results released Wednesday by the country's Electoral Commission. Martha van der Wolf reports for VOA from Addis Ababa.
The Electoral Board says the ruling EPRDF party and its allies have won all the parliamentary seats decided so far, 442 out of 547. The Ethiopian Political Revolutionary Democratic Front won all of the seats in the capital city, Addis Ababa. Opposition parties only won a single parliamentary seat in the 2010 elections. It is not yet clear if they won more seats this time around, says Merga Bakena of the Electoral Board.
Regarding the remaining results, we have to wait. According to our timetable, we have time to gather, to collect, and then describe it or publish it according to our schedule. But I cannot tell you actually how many the remaining seats will be occupied by opposition or by ruling parties.
Final results are expected on June 22nd. Leaders of the two largest opposition parties, Blue Party and MEDREC, could not be immediately reached to comment on the preliminary results. Both have accused the government of harassing and intimidating their supporters before and during the elections. African Union observers judged the elections as calm, peaceful and credible, but significantly did not use the terms free and fair. The U.S. State Department commended Ethiopia for holding peaceful elections, but also said it is deeply concerned by continued restrictions on civil society, media, opposition parties and independent voices and views. Ethiopia's National Electoral Board says an equal platform was created for all political parties, and the government has denied accusations of obstructing the opposition in any manner. Merga says opposition parties should accept the reality. Merga says the accusations of the opposition parties are baseless. The new parliament will convene in October, and EPRDF has already said that if the party wins again, Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn will likely be appointed to serve another 5 years in office. The EPRDF has been in power since ousting the regime of former dictator Mengistu Haile Mariam in 1991. The preliminary results came out one day before Ethiopia officially celebrates the downfall of the former regime. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
A court in Angola is expected to render a verdict today, Thursday, in the case against journalist and anti-corruption activist Rafael Marques de Moraes. He is charged with criminal libel for having exposed human rights abuses in the diamond-producing province in the northeast of the country. The case was brought by seven Angolan military generals led by the Minister of State and head of presidential security. De Moraes says the charges stemmed from a book he wrote in which he recounts more than 500 cases of torture and 100 killings allegedly carried out in two diamond-producing districts. Angolan authorities were not immediately available for comment. De Moraes says his expectations about today's verdict are low because the judge will do whatever the military generals tell him to do.
I was asked on the 21st of May, before the hearing started, to basically make a statement to enable the generals and the prosecution to drop the charges. The general's lawyers pleaded with my lawyer to convince me to make a statement to enable them just to say, in light of this statement, we're no longer pursuing the charges. And what was the statement? Basically, I explained in court that I submitted my questions to the general's companies on the human rights abuses, but I've learned in court that these questions were not forwarded to the generals themselves. And as a sign of good faith, since there was this willingness from the generals to make the case go away, I reaffirmed my commitment not to reprint the book again because it has already also been printed 8 times. To my surprise, when I got to the courtroom, the public prosecutor did nothing but lie in front of the international observers who were in the courtroom, twisted, mangled what I had on the record in court, and basically said that I apologize and I acknowledge that I had written falsehoods when I never said any of that. And furthermore, the prosecutor also stated that in light of me not having presented any witnesses, I should be sentenced to a month in prison, and if the judge wanted, could suspend that sentence.
In reality, they are making you to at least admit guilt, when in fact you did not admit guilt.
Yes, and also because the case had no grounds to proceed. I was asked by the army to take a patriotic stand because this case was being very damaging to the Angolan armed forces as well, so that we could bring this to a positive end for both sides.
So the army asked you to take a patriotic stand, meaning what? Not to pursue the case?
And exactly to make that small statement as a token of my good faith, so that the generals would drop the case, then we would all go home. And when I went back to court, I realized that they had odd intentions. And it's important to explain here that the prosecutor would not have taken that stand if he did not receive orders from above.
On Thursday now, what do you expect? Do you expect the judge is going to announce sentence for you and then suspend that? Or is he going to respect your view that you did not say what the generals are saying?
As I explained to you, the lawyer has already said that he spoke to the judge on what should be the sentence. So what can I expect from this lawyer?
So in reality, the judge is going to give you a month sentence but suspended.
The judge will do what he's told. And if the generals or whoever is calling the shot changes the mind and say, well, acquit Rafael, I'll be acquitted. If says increase the sentence, he'll increase the sentence. He is only a pawn. He's not a judge in the latter senses.
That was Angolan journalist and anti-corruption activist Rafael Marques de Moraes. He was speaking with me from the capital, Luanda. The UN Security Council unanimously adopted a resolution on Wednesday on the protection of journalists in conflict zones. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir reports the measure comes as the number of deaths and kidnappings of media professionals continues to climb.
Reporters Without Borders says 66 journalists were killed last year and 25 more have died since January. In the last decade, 700 media workers have been killed in the field or because of their profession. The resolution condemns such attacks and warns parties to conflicts, including governments and armed groups, that they should take all reasonable steps to protect journalists. It also calls for the immediate and unconditional release of reporters who are hostages in conflict zones. Christophe Delois of Reporters Without Borders said Iraq and Syria have become two of the most dangerous places for journalists to work, with 45 killed in Syria since that conflict started in 2011, and at least 15 killed in Iraq since 2013. He said ensuring accountability is key to preventing future attacks.
In the world, more than 90% of the crimes against journalists are never prosecuted, are never punished. It's like an encouragement for all those who commit crimes against journalists. So if we want to protect journalists, we have to fight impunity.
Delois said attacks on journalists in conflict zones could be considered war crimes and should be referred to the International Criminal Court. U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power, herself a former journalist, said even in countries at peace, erosions on press freedoms and the harassment and intimidation of reporters often signal a crackdown on civil, political, and human rights. She gave as an example the current political turmoil in Burundi, where the military challenged President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to seek what is widely seen as an unconstitutional third term in power.
Since the unlawful attempt to seize power was quashed, several independent journalists report being told that they are on a list of people to be arrested, and many more reportedly have been threatened with death, torture, and disappearance, leading them to go into hiding.
Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Time for Daybreak Africa. Sporting, here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with football. Outgoing champions Zambia salvaged a measure of pride with a convincing 3-0 triumph over guest side Ghana in the plate semifinals at the Council of Southern Africa Football Association's COSAFA Cup at the Moruleng Stadium, Northwest Province in South Africa, on Wednesday. In the other semifinal, Malawi pipped hosts South Africa 5-4 in a post-match penalty shootout following their 0-0 open play deadlock. The plate contest is for teams that were eliminated in the quarterfinals. Meanwhile, today, Thursday, Namibia plays Madagascar before Botswana face Mozambique in the semifinals. Turning to basketball, the East and Central Africa Intercity Basketball Championship gets underway in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania today, Thursday. The 5-day event has attracted over 20 teams from Egypt, Ethiopia, Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, South Sudan, Somalia, Sudan, Uganda, and Tanzania. The Egyptian capital Cairo are the men's defending champions, while the Kenyan capital Nairobi are the women's title holders. In rugby, Kenya hosts Portugal in a 15-a-side international in Nairobi on Saturday. This will be the first time Kenya hosts a European side in a test match. The Kenyans will also host Spain next month. This is part of Kenya's build-up to the Africa Rugby Division 1A tournament later this year. Finally, in athletics, the inaugural Airtel Africa Mashariki Half Marathon and 10-kilometer road races take place in Kampala, Uganda on Sunday. The event is being staged under the theme, "The East Africa We Would Like to Live In." And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Monk. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch says lies, corruption, and bribery have plagued football's governing body, FIFA, for over two decades. That's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butter saying, have a lovely day.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays. On Saturdays, tune in at 3:30 and 14:30 UTC. And on Sundays at 5:30 and 17:30 UTC. Or subscribe to the Encounter podcast. Just go to our homepage at voanews.com and click on podcasts. Also, we love to hear from you. Send an email to encounter@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Carol Castiel VOA. That's Encounter on VOA Africa.